Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I am Lori Walsh. If you placed a bet on the Super Bowl, you were not alone. But do you place bets on sporting events every day? How about every hour? If you do, it turns out you're still not alone. More than $2.6 billion were wagered in the fantasy sports industry in 2015. Walt Bogdanich is an investigative reporter at the New York Times and a Frontline correspondent. Frontline premieres The Fantasy Sports Gamble, a collaboration with the New York Times tonight at 9 p.m. Central on SDPB-TV and online at pbs.org/frontline. Walt Bogdanich, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thanks for having me.
And now I want to start with, when we think fantasy sports, I think of a group of coworkers getting together, having their draft, and then waiting a season to find out who's going to win the $5 pot. That's not what we're talking about. Tell us how it used to work and what's changed. How does fantasy sports betting work now?
Well, many decades ago, it was exactly as you described it. It was an opportunity for friends and colleagues to get together, you know, bet a little bit, drink a little bit, and then pick teams, fantasy teams, and then wait and see how they did at the end of the season. But you had to wait a long time. And it was mainly just a social event. And then the internet changed everything. And people recognized that, hey, this could be bigger than it is. And if we want it to get bigger, we need to really target the millennial generation. And that's what these daily fantasy sites did. They went after the kids in the 20s and in early 30s, young males usually, and they responded in part because the industry spent, a couple $100 million advertising.
Yeah, that was my question. How did they target that? That's a difficult demographic to pull in. What did they do to target them?
Well, they made it mobile. And they made it fast, and that really kind of was in sync with how, you know, people of that age, you know, respond. I mean, they want everything on their iPhone, they want it quick, they want it short, and they don't want to wait for 8 months, and it just appealed to them. And sports has just been getting bigger and bigger. The audience has been expanding. And these were young people who were already interested in sports, and this enhanced the experience for them.
Mm. And so what does it look like to be a fantasy sports bettor on a daily basis? How much money are these people winning? How much money are they losing?
Well, if you watch the advertisements, they're winning millions of dollars. And that may be true for a handful, but certainly not true for most. Those are private companies, so we really don't know full details about, you know, their business operation. But I did interview one kid, really, he's in, ending his junior year in college, and he was betting tens of thousands of dollars every day.
Hmm.
That's a lot of money for a college kid, and he happened to be good at it. So, on the day we were there, I think he won, he bet like, he ended up winning about $5,000.
And did he have like an emotional response to that? Was he jumping up and down on the couch at that point? Or was it just business as usual for him?
Business as usual. When you play 400 to 500 games a day, believe me, it becomes business as usual. And he told me that his enjoyment of sports had changed. Mm. And that's supposedly why people begin playing fantasy sports. That's what daily fantasy sports sites, you know, say is really what they're all about. But he said it had become more of a job, and it really changed his the way he watched sports. Now he watched sports because he could make money. And people who go into it thinking that they're going to make money, I think many of them, if not most of them, are going to be in for a surprise.
So do the people who are playing it feel like they are gambling? What do they feel that they're doing when they play these games?
Well, this guy...
winning. They feel like they're winning.
Kept his message very in sync with what the daily fantasy companies were putting out, that it's entertainment, it's an investment. He used the word investment. He said, it's like, you know, you get $10,000 to invest in the stock market. It's no different than what I'm doing. He never used the word betting, really. Mm. He didn't want to use the word betting because that's not kosher. So they look at it as investments.
And he sees it as a game of skill, then not chance. Let's talk about that distinction a little bit between when is it gambling and when is it skill-based.
Well, the whole issue of whether something is gambling or not is determined in each and every state. It's, in other words, on the state level. But there was a federal law that was passed in 2006 that was aimed at, you know, getting rid of these sort of illegal online offshore gambling operations. But there was an exemption carved out for fantasy sports because it was believed back then in 2006 that it was involved more skill than luck, and based on that it was exempted. And so they used that as a, you know, an opening to really turn to daily fantasy sports, which did not exist at the time the bill was passed.
And some of these bets are even occurring on the hour.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's gone from seasonal to daily to one outfit that we saw recently. It was called 10-Minute Fantasy Sports.
How does that work?
More instant than that. I really don't know. But I did see even more than that, that you could then bet on whether LeBron James was going to make his next basket, you know, his next shot. I mean, that, I don't know how anyone can interpret that as anything but gambling. Yeah.
Maybe LeBron. I don't know. I'm trying to get my mind around. I agree with you. I don't see how that's not. How is this not gambling? Is the first thing that comes in my mind. How is it not gambling?
So, well, that's what the attorneys general around the country are asking.
Yeah,
too.
Let's talk about those folks. Who's investigating this, and what are they looking into?
Well, at times it seems like half the nation is looking into it. I know that one report I saw from one of the daily fantasy site companies told me that. Said that there were about 21 states that are contemplating regulation this year, and many others that are looking at it in terms of, is this legal? Is this gambling? And many of them are concluding that it is gambling and therefore illegal, and it's something that should be regulated, as are casinos and things of that nature. Racetracks, they're regulated, they're gambling, but this has somehow managed to escape. And I think with all the criticism that's being directed at these sites now, the fantasy sports companies are now kind of changing position and kind of rushing to the protection of regulation, saying, well, why don't you regulate us now and save us?
Are they slowing down their advertising? Is the controversy making them slow down their massive dollars of advertising?
Yeah, it's hard to find an ad on television anymore, whereas you couldn't avoid it in the past.
So you tried to go and hunt down where some of the bets that were coming from illegal betting from outside the United States. You took a few trips. You want to tell us a little bit about where you went to hunt some folks down?
Well, there was one of the biggest offshore gambling sites really in the world, one of the most popular. It was even mentioned in one of the episodes of The Sopranos, and it was, you know, it had been involved in some prosecutions in this country, but it still seemed to be operating. So we went to where it was based, in the island of Curaçao, which is about 40 miles off the coast of Venezuela, and we set out to try and learn about what kind of regulation is going on there, and whether these people would talk to us, because Curaçao is also the home for, I mean, who knows how many other sites, many, many others that we've run into. They were operating there as well because it's a tolerant government. And, you know, and so we tried to track down this one place, and before we went, we were told that trying to find someone to talk about online gambling in Curaçao would be like chasing a ghost.
Right.
And they were accurate because we chased the ghost and didn't catch it.
I don't want to give away too much about the program itself, but you're there and they're actually physically moving to another location when you arrive, which you're not so sure is a coincidence.
Well, I was sitting in the lobby of the hotel where they had operated from for many years, and it was my first day there. And I thought, well, I'll go down there and have a cup of coffee and see what happens. And sure enough, this was after we had requested an interview, they start carting out their computers and whatnot to a truck, and then I guess you can find out what happens if you watch the film.
Were you ever concerned for your own safety as you sort of chase down these billion-dollar companies and they start filming you in return? Did you ever say, we better be a little cautious here?
Yes, we were cautious, and we had a local fixer, as we call it. When you go to a foreign country, foreign land you're unfamiliar with, you want to hire somebody who knows the lay of the land, and we did that down there. And as soon as this person, we didn't tell him what we were doing, and as soon as this person learned we were investigating this one gambling site, that was it. She quit on the spot. I don't want to have anything to do with this.
Which was an indication to you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one has to be careful in everything you do as a reporter. And I mean, I was never felt that my life was threatened, but you know, I mean, there's a lot of money at stake, and when that's the case, people want to protect it, and sometimes they'll do things that they wouldn't otherwise do.
And there's a serious amount of computer forensics, is what I would call it, of sort of searching for these servers, and they pop up in the United States and then they disappear. So what was that like from a journalistic perspective? Did you have to partner with people who really understood how these servers work and how data shifts from the cloud to a physical location?
It was one of the most fascinating parts of the investigation. In fact, is the part I think that I enjoyed the most, learning about how the Internet works. Everybody thinks they hear about the cloud and they hear about these things, and you think they're, try and contact a site, and you think that's where it's located. It turns out they can be located anywhere. They may have a registration that puts them in Curacao, but what we discovered is that they have infrastructure in the United States, which is important because they had been claiming they had no business. They didn't do business in the United States because it was illegal. Mm-hmm. And with the help of some experts in the Internet and some smart people here, we were able to trace their operation to these servers around the United States. And as soon as we found that and asked them about it, they disappeared. They moved off the sites in the United States and went on to Europe. And this is something I think the prosecutors could have done if they wanted to, if they knew how to do it. Mm-hmm. And we, I guess, just beat them to it, and kind of proud of that, actually.
They can watch the program, and they'll figure out what they need to do next.
Hopefully.
Tell me about the benefit to the sports franchises. What does the NFL get out of this? Anything?
Well, again, we're talking about the fantasy sports here. They surprisingly have embraced fantasy sports. They've cut deals with the fantasy sports companies, all the pro leagues, and which was kind of a curious position to take because they've all for years opposed any kind of gambling. And I guess they figured, well, if the fantasy sports companies tell us this isn't gambling, well, then we can partner with them and we can make money off them. Mm-hmm. And they have, and their ads are all over their stadiums and ball fields and whatnot. But now they're getting a little nervous because in states like New York, where the Attorney General has ruled it to be illegal gambling, and that is the home of Major League Baseball, it is the home of the National Football League, the heat in the kitchen is getting turned up a little bit on these guys now.
Yeah.
And they're getting a bit nervous and expressing some concern about the direction that things are going.
Well, we just have about a minute left, but I feel like we'd do a disservice if we didn't talk about, is this a victimless crime?
Well, no, it's not. And fantasy sports people say that there are no victims. We found otherwise. People can develop significant problems playing this, in part because the industry tells them it's skill and it's not gambling, and they believe it. And these ads say you can win big and it's easy. Well, that's really not the case.
It's a fascinating show. So thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you.
Walt Bogdanich is an investigative reporter at the New York Times and a frontline correspondent. You can watch the Fantasy Sports Gamble tonight on SDPBTV at 9 p.m. Central. It's online at pbs.org/frontline.